Hey guys, and welcome to this week's episode of the Top Producing Zone podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Michael Jin.
And I'm Shane Carvalho.
And Shane and I are super thrilled this week to have Casey Hinchman with us. Casey is a luxury real estate powerhouse, a mindset business and fitness high performance coach. Plus, he's good buddies with Shane, so that makes him the perfect guest. He hits the trifecta with us. And what I'll say is what I appreciate most in learning more about Casey that we'll get into on today's show is that he's truly lived what he coaches. So he went from rapid success to losing everything in the 2008 recession to now becoming financially free as of 2021. And he's helping others to get there as quickly as possible as well. So Casey, with that, welcome to the show. Great having you, brother.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate that. Fantastic introduction.
That apparently is my specialty.
I love it. Well, you have other talents, but you're definitely good at that one. Great intro. The best ever.
Fantastic. I'm going to keep that in mind. You can introduce me anytime soon.
There we go. I love that. So let's start off with a fun one. You and Shane go way back. You guys have reconnected. How have you both known each other? Any fun stories to share?
Yeah. Well, so we, I'm not sure exactly how long we've known each other, but somewhere approaching, a couple of decades, we were both initially in real estate finance. We at least knew of each other. And then I know that for definitely like 13 or so years ago, we were at the same real estate company. So we definitely met and were talking at that point. But you know how it is. It's like within a profession, something like real estate, you see each other kind of from afar. Lenders don't tend to have a lot of interaction. So, it was interesting because we started both of us in financing 20 plus years ago. And I think Shane, you probably feel the same way. It gives you an advantage. I mean, definitely gives us an advantage with regards to how we investment, structuring financing, just all kinds of things that most real estate agents, don't know. So it's interesting how things work when you connect the dots looking back because as real estate agents, I think that was having that financing just really gave, all that knowledge gave us a huge advantage. It was a great lead in. So that's kind of like where our initial connection. And then we've, developed friendship and everything over the years, both being top producing agents and both, being motivated to be on the cutting edge of kind of whatever is going on. And so I think, inspiring each other here and there has been part of it. And so that's kind of
well, and we're still standing. We're still standing too, but really quick though on the lending transition into real estate, the reason that you and I had such a head start when we crossed over, it's because we crossed over during, you came in a little after me into the sales side, I think, because it was 2009 during the whole short sale foreclosure time.
Yeah.
The mortgage experience had me already tapped in with who became like the short sale reps and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then knowing how to work with finance and mortgages allowed me to know how to do short sales pretty quick and easy. Yeah. And having those relationships with the title and escrow and everything. So it's like we actually – well, I'll speak for myself. I'll speak for you, but it was a blessing to actually cross over at that time because we had a leg up on the traditional agent.
Absolutely.
Right.
Like
humble beginnings, doing the bottom feeding, struggling like low, my average sales price when I was, remember me and Brandy were top producers right before you came on. Remember we were like top producers at David Lane. So when I hit that number, I closed 41 deals. My average sales price was $250K. So look, I want to hear more obviously from you, but I know that we can relate coming in. And so, talk about your experience, right? When you did cross over, because, I got into a lot of investment stuff and everything, and I know you did a lot of investment stuff. So talk about kind of your journey at that point, because, obviously there was the whole recession and everything else, but then talk about how you're out of the country for a while, you came back. Talk about the first steps that you feel like built that initial momentum.
Well, the thing is, it's like when you talk about the struggle that we both went through, and it seemed, we don't see the world as it is. We often see the world as we are, but it seemed like at that time, so much of the world, well, let's face it, the entire world was impacted in some way in the 2008 market crash, the recession, even if it was just that your net worth went down temporarily and you took advantage of some kind of other investment and you're really wealthy or whatever. I mean, everybody was affected. It was, it was a very real situation. But our struggles, again, so speaking for myself, going through those struggles, but I think you would agree that the worth is found at the bottom. The gold is found at the bottom. You know, it's like those experiences are the making of you. And it's like, you know, for me, I saw real estate. It was like with a real estate license, you can do both. Or you could do both with just that one license at that time, you know? And so it was easy to kind of do that or to do a little bit of both of them. But really, the way to do really, really well at something is to focus, as you know. And real estate was a lot more attractive. Really glad that I made that transition at that time. And I bet you can relate to this too. If you're really good at doing home loan financing or whatever, the idea when it comes to delegating or giving anything over to somebody else is challenging, right? You're like, who am I going to do my home loans when I like knew so well how to do them? And definitely part of like maturing for all of us in different forms is like success through others, right? So it's like whether it's forms of delegating or stepping back from something when it's not your wheel, you know, like our wheelhouse. I think that's a huge thing. And not everyone is willing to do what it takes to make the transition, you know, because in a way, even though we were tapped in, you are starting over in a certain way. You're starting over. You have to have that like beginner mindset. There's things that you really don't know, or things to unlearn if you're transitioning from one, you know, one profession or perspective to another. So,
right.
And you know, it's like, it was Darwin. I think it was Darwin said, it's not the strong, but the, not the strong, but like the adaptive that survive. Those who are able to adapt to what's going on are the ones that are able to make it. It's like a bumper sticker or like some quote when you say it, but like when you actually do it, it's very powerful, you know, to make it through those transitions that life occasionally throws at us.
Well, you know what's interesting, Casey? Like, Michael, I'm going to pass the mic over here to Michael, but Michael, what I want you to understand, because I know at that time you weren't in this industry yet, because we're obviously a little bit older.
I was in college.
But
yeah. Well, I think I was right out of college.
Look, I was giving you credit for being younger. You didn't have to make us feel old now. But no, what... What you have to understand is that so what gave us our launch also ended a lot of careers, because there was seasoned successful agents that when the market shifted, and we're lucky because our coastal market, there was still some volume because, you know, the rich get richer and, you know, there wasn't as much of a struggle here on the, you know, the higher end. But, you know, the bulk, especially as you went inland or to the lower price points or the lower economy, you know, markets, you know, there's a lot of short sale foreclosure. A lot of these agents have been around for a long time. Some of them hadn't been long enough to be through a previous crash. They did not want to shift gears to equip themselves and learn to handle the distressed market, short sales, foreclosures, etc. People like Casey and myself were like, let's go to war. I mean, this is whatever it's going to be. It was our launching point. And so the fact that 20 years later, we're still standing, it's that was the first step in building the resilience. Now, what you've seen since you've come in, Michael, is you've seen people jump into the market when it's super hot. And then you've seen the massive exodus, like right now, when there's 30% less volume, rates have been higher. So you've seen a little bit of that now. But you have to understand, when we came in our lifetimes, that was probably the biggest, like, what would you say, Casey, like the biggest changing of the guard? I mean, I don't know, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, absolutely. Transfer of wealth. And it was really, it was scary for us. You know, we were in our 20s and a couple of things. So one is the meaning that we tie to things, right? Like the meaning that we tie to what happened, because we decide, right? Like when a relationship ends in life or anything happens or a market changes or the government orders you not to leave your house or whatever ridiculous stuff is going on. It's like, we decide what the meaning is. Like, is this the end or is this the beginning, you know, for example. And so for me, it's interesting too, because when you really ask people who like high level coaches across, you know, the MBA or whatever, and it's really interesting, anyone who deals with success at a high level, who knows what success is, it's interesting because when you really get down to it, it's like, what motivates one person? Because we all want, our brain wants to just go, oh, once somebody's successful at a certain level, that's just talent. Like, especially when we're young and somebody else has done something for years we haven't seen, and then you go play soccer or whatever, and they're just like incredible. And you think they're just gifted. Sometimes they are, but more often than not, especially as we get older, it's the time that we put into these things, right? And the amount of time and the effort that you're going to put into something is directly proportionate to like how important you see it to be. And you know, really, you guys, like when it comes to success in anything, you hear people say sometimes things like, well, when whatever level of success is important to you is breathing, then you'll attain it. Like that kind of concept, right? And again, it sounds like something that like a coach would tell you or whatever. I can tell you this, for me,
You are a coach.
So, you know, but for me, I absolutely, it was like survival level, like becoming truly financially independent, eventually financially free, and having, you know, what leads up to that is there's like a process, right? Because you have to become like financially literate. You have to find a way to make really the best income that you can make. You have to find a way to invest that to get the best returns that you can make. So there's a lot of different steps, but in the end, I wanted to not have to worry about money. It took me a while to even become clear on what that meant, but it became like breathing because I watched, when I was talking to you guys before, I may have mentioned that my parents got divorced when I was 9, and watching them get divorced, there was a financial component that just added stress. It wasn't like the reason they got divorced, but they were under tremendous financial stress. And that's the number one thing that couples fight about. It's an interesting dynamic. And, you know, if they were financially fine, would they still be married? I don't know. But I can tell you that I didn't want that additional stress. I was very clear from a young age, from like a deep emotional meaning to it, you know? And so seeing it for what it was, not like making it something it wasn't, I just saw clearly like this adds stress to a relationship if your finances are a mess, if like your house is about to be foreclosed on, if you're going into bankruptcy, like these things don't help, right? You can get past them. But we thought we had conquered that early on in those years that we're talking about, Shane, like from 2003 or 4 through 2007 or so, which is only a handful of years, but we kind of lived a lifetime. It was like a career lifetime in that time. We went from never owning a house to buying multiple houses. We got over leveraged. And so, we thought that we had this high net worth, right? That's why you guys, like when it comes to financial freedom, like your net worth isn't financial freedom. Like your equity isn't financial freedom, or your credit score, or your income, or all these other things. It's your passive income that you can spend that consistently comes to you, ideally off of an appreciating asset of some sort, and the income naturally will tend to go up over time. But it's like, that's financial freedom. It's a really simple equation. And when that clicked for me, it still took me, because I had to undo the mess I was in, it still took me 15 years to get there, but it's very doable. Anyway, I'll stop and let you guys jump in. Sorry to ramble.
No, I think that's just amazing. And I want to go back to something, Shane, that you said earlier. Yes, 2000, I was still young at the point. I was just getting out of college. But
here we go.
Was interesting because, no, well, I was going to say it was interesting for me because I actually saw kind of that lens of being adaptable, being able to pivot, being able to like build yourself back up from the lens of actually my dad.
Oh yeah.
Because he had, you know, we immigrated here to the States when I was a kid. So he spent his life, like early years, like working his way up through the corporate ladder, right? But then comes the recession, he actually got laid off. And so I think in a way it was a blessing in disguise for him because yeah, we were worried about the finances and we're like, oh no, like we've gotten so used to like just, at least for me too, like just two parents in the household working steady, you know, like steady, like income producing jobs with salaried jobs. Right. And then all of a sudden my dad loses his job. And it's like, what do you do at that point? I mean, he's older in life at that age. And then he had to basically like reinvent himself. He went kind of the entrepreneurship route and he just had to like slowly figure it out. Like he basically went back to China and built up a business I didn't know this until later on. He went to Sand Hill Road up here in the Bay Area. Right. Went to these VC firms one after another, just like had no fear, just went to each one. It was like, here's my proposal. What do you think? Failed once, failed twice, failed three times. But each time that he failed, he was willing to learn from that. He refined his pitch. He refined his idea. Fourth time got funding and then, you know, off he went. And so it is very interesting to hear your stories too, because it's that willingness to be open. It's that adaptability. It's being able to bring yourself down and just say, not bring yourself down, but allowing yourself to say, okay, I'm not afraid to like start over. And what does it mean? Be curious, dig in, and continue to grow into a new path from there. And so it's interesting hearing your guys' story and then kind of reflecting back on my dad's, because it seems to be like some common themes there.
That's super just impressive, Michael, and like kind of touching, because I remember being in my 20s and I remember you're so locked into your world, especially when things are going bad, or like you're losing your home and you know, whatever. But even just to gain the success just at that age, I was so focused on my world. And then I remember coming out of it and having these peripheral thoughts like, whoa, there's people out there whose parents are losing homes or all these different, you know, things. And here's just a real random detail, you guys. But I love the story about your dad, and that's incredible that you have the opportunity to see that, Michael. I think that's amazing. And it obviously stuck with you. and had some emotion around. You know, the best lessons, the reason that people say the best way to learn is through experience is because the emotions, it has the highest emotional intensity. So it tends to stick with you, right? Like that's a firsthand, I mean, you're watching your father, but that's your firsthand experience. It stays with you. If somebody's just telling you, especially when they're just telling you, like not showing you, or hypocritically, like this is the way, blah, 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 your ability or likelihood to retain that lesson, even if it's a good one, is very low because the emotional intensity, unless they slap you, you know, while they're telling you the story or whatever, but it's just, it's interesting. And like that, like you're saying, that openness to learn, it's just, it's incredible because the reality is this, it's like such an important thing in this life is like, if you are clear on what you want and when things get bad, you have a family to take care of, or you just need to survive, that will clarify some things for sure. Tends to clarify things. You apply stress, you know, often at points, certain times will tend to really clarify things. And when you get clear on what you want and why you want it, then like, no matter how you cut it, there are steps that are really not that complicated to take. And if you're willing to take those steps, like your father, and be told no, and you know, over and over, so whether it's like humiliation or rejection or loss or all these things, but like, I know this about life because I've witnessed and experienced this multiple times myself and seen people around me that it's like, and you guys have too, where it's like, life is this thing where it's like, you say, this is what I want. And life is like, okay, we'll see. But the difficulties tend to be kind of front loaded, even how long lasting they seem. There's this front loaded aspect to where if you can make it through just that beginning, like enough rejections, enough failed attempts or whatever, and you keep staying clear. And of course you got to be willing to correct what you're doing, but like you will absolutely get there. Like the formula is that simple, right? Like this is what I want and why I want it. I go after it. I measure my progress. I make corrections. Eventually I'll get there if I don't give up on what I want. But the thing is like, what's the reality, guys? We overcomplicate it to justify inaction. And you go out, you ask one person for, you give one person your proposal, one company, and then you stop, you know? So perseverance.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I feel like a lot of times, and you kind of hit it right on the head there. It's perseverance. It's not giving up. But I think a lot of times, especially at this day and age, it's very easy to want to give up because I think we're just flooded by what we see on social media. We see, you know, like, hey, this person's, you know, in this fancy car, this person has like 10 houses and, you know, like I want to get there. And it's like, if we try one thing and we don't get there, I feel like the natural ingrained response these days is, okay, let me go figure out what another option is without seeing the first one through.
So true.
So Casey, I think, you know, one of the things I was reading about you and I appreciated is, you know, you, as you kind of went on this journey to getting to financial freedom, it seemed to me like you took a very holistic approach about going about this. Like there was a focus on the physical, the emotional, the spiritual. And you talk about really, you mentioned this even earlier, like the power of being focused, And also, you know, you talk about conscious congruent living. So can you kind of dig into that a little bit more? And like, what is so important about that to helping yourself achieve success that you want?
Absolutely. Great question. You know, so when I was growing up, at a point I was blessed to have a neighbor who lived across the street from me, and he was a bit of a mentor, just a good example for me. And, you know, a couple of things that I saw, he lived that type of life where, well, coincidentally, it was actually kind of funny the way things work out. Cause I work with my wife, we're partners as real estate agents and really in all of our businesses. And, and so we worked together like pretty much our entire relationship. And he and his wife, or his partner, they worked together, as well. They were stockbrokers, they call it back then, financial planners, you know, whatever, there's a lot of names for it, but they would get up early, go to work, come back, and then they would relax. This is in Laguna Beach too, which is a pretty cool town. They have a nice place with a little ocean view, and they would kind of relax, maybe have some lunch, and then they would go either together or separately and work out in the afternoon. You know, he would go surf sometimes or go run up in the hills. So really, you know, it took me a while to see this. I mean, I saw what he was doing right away, and I saw it made a lot of sense to me. But then over the years, it's come to my attention that that's actually more rare sometimes of an approach to life. Maybe especially in like our Western culture, where you see people who have perhaps, this is an example of like the incongruencies that we see in how people live. It's like being really great at one aspect of life or one thing or one sport, right? But then all the other major areas of your life, or many of them, are just are a mess. And don't get me wrong, because I've experienced dramatic messes in every area of my life. So I'm not coming from a place of like everybody else, you know, that applies to it and not me. Sometimes that's where we learn, you know, it's usually where we learn the some of the best lessons, or have the opportunity to learn some of the best lessons. But
absolutely.
But yeah, the so being aware of it, you know, like a lot of things, just being aware of it when it comes to mindset, which really everything starts there. It's like, I tell people this, mindset is like the thoughts and the emotions that you, it's a kind of combination that you experience on a consistent basis. And even having an idea like that you want to experience certain thoughts and emotions on a consistent basis is a big deal. So even like having the awareness of like, I could have a life where I wake up early, work really hard in a profession that I get paid well for. And then later on in the day, my wife and I go do cool stuff, or I go work out. And so it's like, whereas other people might just sit in the office, like come in at like 9 or 10 and be in the office kind of all day, and then kind of just go home and be, feel kind of spent. Right. So it's like interesting to see when you get the example of seeing somebody who takes their life, like who manages their time in such a way, they take their life to another level. Yeah. It's like, it becomes pretty addictive, you know? So I was blessed to see that as an example. And that's what started.
Well, you know what, Casey, just really quick on that, you were, you know, putting me in that thought process. So, you know, in this country, it's like you're raised even in school to be like in the rat race, right? Like go work all these hours. You got to work so hard. So when I go back to the Azores, you know, because my parents are immigrants from the Azores. So like Michael's dad and my dad, similar, right? Hard. Like it's probably good because we turned out okay. But, you know, when I go back to the Azores every summer, they still shut down the businesses at noon, have lunch and go take a nap. And like, you know, there's, and then like the hours that are work, they're hard workers and everything, but it's like, it's so weird that when you go to these areas where they're still a little more behind the times, mm-hmm. it's like, I feel like in this country, we've tried to reinvent the wheel, like when some of the old school stuff really worked. And it's like, it feels like, don't you feel like you're kind of going back? Don't you feel like you're going back to how it actually was before? Isn't that weird? Like it's going, don't you feel like it's cycling back to the way it used to be?
Yeah.
Because especially for someone like me with the whole ADHD thing, it's like you got to do focused spurts of work. Because I could sit at a desk all day and be not productive. But if you take me, work me out in the morning, put me at the desk for a couple hours and have me go get some air, run to go see a property, whatever, like I can be super effective. Like sometimes even in the afternoon, there'll be a random, like all of a sudden at my desk at 6 o'clock and I'm like crushing it. And it's like, wait, bro, it's like 6 o'clock, but it's like, but if you've been good with your day, I know Michael, you're laughing. He knows me. Well, you know me, but Michael really knows me. But anyway, back to you guys. I had to share, cause I was just thinking about that. It's like, well, you just said, I've never seen it that way, but it's like full circle going back to how it used to be.
Well, and there's a part of me that feels like that's kind of where, Casey, you alluded to this earlier, the importance of really understanding what it means to be financially free also comes into play.
Yeah.
Because I look at why people are in the rat race, especially here in the Bay Area and the Silicon Valley, and it's, I got to make enough money to make ends meet and to make a living, cover all my costs, and everything just keeps on going higher and higher and higher. And without the concept of like financial freedom, then people can just, they never exit out of this. And so the only thing they ever focus on is work. And that's one of the things I've come to learn is like to what you were talking about earlier about congruent living is, you know, we're human beings. We're not designed to just focus on one aspect of who we are. You know, finances, sure, that's important. Everybody has to make a living, make some money. But then we're also built to have emotional connections. We're also built to have some kind of spiritual connection, whatever it is you believe in. We're built to have, you know, physical connections with people. And it's like, I just feel like having grown up here in the Bay Area in Cupertino, it's interesting because I feel like I have seen that shift and that change where it's like, now if you look at the pie, it's like 99% financial. And then everything else is like neighbor, what neighbor? I've never talked to my neighbor, even though I've lived there for like 15 years, right? Community events. What the hell is a community event? I don't give a shit about that. Right. And I feel like we're just like, no one's really living a holistic life, and no one like, and I think part of this is also the education system, was we're never taught like outside of, you know, here's a problem, go solve it, or like make money, or go into these specific careers. We're never actually taught about financial freedom, financial planning, financial responsibility. Yeah. And I feel like that's a huge gap.
So true. So true. Really,
well, there's that gap. There's that gap. And then the other thing too, Michael, is that like, now you're starting to see a lot more collaboration, schools, businesses, look at the teams in real estate. But if you go back a few years, it's cutthroat competition, especially in the Silicon Valley. Like you want to, mm-hmm. you know, you want to destroy everybody around you. There was no unity. And then what I was saying earlier about going full circle and like things that are behind the times, us people over here in the small towns on the coast, you see that people treat each other better, right? In general, like people are so rude in the Bay Area. Not, I mean, I don't want to label the whole Bay Area, but you know what I mean? It's like in the big city, it's like people are not very friendly or very social. Like, dude, you probably only know like one of your neighbors and most of them you see and they'd probably never even talk to you. Here, like I can go outside right now. I could talk to every neighbor on my street and they want to talk to me. Sometimes I have to duck because I'm in a hurry and I'm trying not to get stopped by every neighbor. I promise you, like, you live in a nice place. I'm not even knocking that, but I'm just saying, you see what I'm saying? It's like, there's, I think that a lot of it has to do where you land. Like, if you're in a big, like, city, like, that your surroundings and your culture, like, and I don't mean like your culture, but I mean like, you know, your environment, not culture, really dictates a lot of how you're going to be and how you're going to act. And that's something that, like, Casey and I are down here living in this different environment. And so it's a lot easier for us to be more holistic because it's just different speed of life. That's why, and Casey knows this, when we go do real estate in the Bay Area, strap it on, baby. Like, it's like, you know, put that helmet on and like, it's just, it's a different animal. And I actually was able to cut my teeth on that market during the crash. Like, I got really aggressive and really good. I was the first one to come down here with like no contingencies, like in my brokerage and my TC wanted to kill me. He's like, what do you mean there's no contingencies on this offer? There's no contingencies. So it just, you know, your environment dictates. So yeah, like you have to be cutthroat. You have to level up.
Yeah. You know, community too. You know, the thing is, you guys, one thing that's a trip is like the more things change, the more they stay the same, you know? And so like the pendulum swings, right? So for example, as we get more into technology and a culture environment where people are able to stay inside, I mean, look what we're doing right here, right? So it, on the one hand, people get are potentially less connected, right? Because you can spend your whole, like the other day I was on Zooms and podcasts and stuff for like 6 hours or something. And it's like, whoa, I haven't left this room. And so, you know, there's that. But then at the same time, like Shane, you know, you've been on those calls where it's like the calls that I do on a weekly basis, I have a couple of group calls that I do. And it's interesting because what I've found in the last decade of working with, you know, being coached myself, by folks in the business community, being coached on things like financial freedom, Michael, you mentioned, and I don't want to talk about that a bit, but you know, just say that I remember before I ever hired a coach as an adult professional who already had success, before I hired a coach who like a life and business coach, you would call it. And I mean, I guess you call it whatever you want, but like somebody who actually first has the results, right? So it's not something that went and like just got something out of a book or whatever. Like they have the results of financial freedom, which by the way, at 40 years old or 42 or whatever, I pulled that off after like a lost decade of losing everything and making huge mistakes. I pulled it off at 42. Who do you know? I mean, and you guys might, because we're in the Bay Area, like somebody who invented, you know, Facebook or GoPro or whatever, but like really, like who do you know at 40 years old that gets to a position on their own where they don't have to work again and a high quality of life, you know? And so the thing is, more to the point, is that the 10 years, as you guys know, 10 years prior to that, you know, I went through the crash, and by being over leveraged, by owning too many properties, by owning rentals that had simple stuff, like simple things, owning properties that were costing me a month, so it cost me $2,000 a month, but it's appreciating way past that. So you hold it a while and you sell it, right? Well, you get a few of those and the market changes and you're stuck holding the bag. A few things like this, right? And so going through that and losing everything and not being able to get a Verizon phone in my name, not being able to car loan in my name, all that stuff. And again, watching my parents back when I was 9, financial stress being a contributing factor, right? Like I came away with some really, there's one of two things are going to happen, right? You're either going with this kind of pressure, this kind of stress, and we're talking finances, we're not talking life and death, but let's face it, when you lose your home, when you lose your income, when you're like, I'm the man, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, he can't even make his way. I mean, like, it affects your life, right? And I got past a lot of that, like things like any embarrassment and things like that. I got past it very quickly, especially because there was more serious things like happening that I had to deal with. But the reality is that when you experience like failure, loss, heartbreak, just any of the negative emotions that are strong related to or around finance. And, you know, not everyone has been, you can look at it either way, blessed with this experience, right? Like lots of people I know grew up with, you know, their middle class, parents are middle class. I mean, you know, we're all middle class, whatever that even means, but grew up in the upper middle class or whatever, where like their parents, I grew up in Laguna Beach. I live in Santa Cruz. So lots of people I know, their parents didn't struggle for money with, you know, they put them through college. They didn't worry, you know, they just never really had to worry. And even now, if they had a problem, really their parents would step in, and that's fine. I'm not even knocking that, but I am saying that like for myself, it was like, whoa, you better figure this out. Cause mom and dad didn't, they were super successful too, by the way, guys. Like they were very, you know, the thing about capitalism, it's awesome, but it's not for the faint of heart, right? And like my parents were killing it at a point, lost everything. So that's what we went through. We were killing it, like killing it, and lost everything financially. And so I was so clear on that. And I guess my main point that, you know, with regards to coaching is that I always wondered, like, and it all depends on the coach and it depends on your relationship with that coach, but can a person that's a high level executive coach, fitness coach, life coach, can a person like that talking to me for like an hour a week or whatever, because there's different, you know, ways you can set it up, can that really make an impact on my life? And the reality is, if it's the right person and you lean into it, change your business and change your life in measurable ways virtually immediately or a lot faster than you possibly thought. And it's like, they're not doing magic or like bending time or like building you some website you've never heard of. They're just cutting through all the crap to like, what's the most effective way to, you know, get rid of fat and gain muscle in the shortest amount of time, realistically, like what's good for you? Like, you know, what's going to get you there and what can we track that will just simply like, not like let's buy courses and books and like enroll you in some kind of university, but like, how quickly can we get you to like what you already really know that's going to get you results? So anyway, and you know, around that though, a sense of community is built. And that's the kind of stuff too, where like you learn financial freedom, like good luck learning it on your own. Seriously, like you have to really like luck into reading the right book that connects with you and finding the right investment to really go out there. Cause you're going to just reinvent the wheel if you don't go to someone or have a source that can really show you just like the basics of how to do that or the fine print, you know? So anyway, a couple of different things I touched on there. Yeah.
I do want to ask you, like, when it comes to coaching and like finding the right coach, I think you've alluded to some things that it sounds like you yourself look for. You know, one is, you know, have they actually accomplished what they said they've accomplished? Do they have results to show for it? Two, can they kind of cut through the BS and help you, like, you know, cut down on the fat? Like, are there other things that, you know, people should assess when they're looking for a coach to kind of help them with what they're trying to do?
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's authenticity in the sense that when you're, I think something that's underrated that we could, and again, especially in this era of like the whole Zoom kind of concept, even though it's been around for years or, you know, whatever platform we're using, the reality is this video technology is that overall to society, it's very new. And so the people, you know, society, humanity is still like learning all how this works to where it's becoming very natural. But the thing is that, you know, one component to it is that certain people have the ability to transfer not only information, but like energy across like a platform like this. And some people don't. They can just tell you, you know, step by step or whatever. So part of, I think that in all of these things have their place, right? Inspiration and motivation and enjoying what we do are dramatically underrated. Right now it's like, you know, forget motivation. It's all about discipline. And I fully get the philosophy behind that. But I'm telling you that maybe just to fake it till you make it, like you have to just force yourself through the steps to form the habits. But there is a point where working out, as Shane knows, becomes incredibly enjoyable. And having breakthroughs mentally where you're like, wow, I have this limiting belief. I got to accept that I've been doing this to myself. And now I'm going to move past that. Like the human mind is incredible. And it's not that you need some astrophysicist or person that like does things, you know, can comprehend things you can't possibly comprehend. You just need somebody, a good coach just simply guides you to what you already know. You know, there's no teacher, it said there's no teacher who that can teach us anything new that can only help us to remember what we already know. So I think that's the biggest, you know, the biggest thing that a coach can bring to the table, along with you want somebody who can hold you accountable, because there's just too much, okay, all right, like this is how I do my calls. The calls are at a certain time each week for my group. And it's like, if you can make it, great. If you need to come late or have your video off or leave early, no problem. Like you're not required to participate. Like, I'll just sit and talk to myself or the one person that wants to be coached. That's totally fine. And plenty of people, and depending on which program they enter, won't go on the live calls because they get videos of those calls. They're on a training program. They have messaging access to me. So, like, you know, people don't need to all be on the calls. But on those calls, you get a sense of community, and you get to talk to somebody who in their wheelhouse, like, whether it's like, I'm a seven-figure earner. I've been with my wife for more than 20 years, blessed to have a truly exceptional relationship, but that doesn't come for free, right? So, like, that's something that I absolutely can speak to, and it's not the first relationship I've had in my life, you know? So you start to realize as you know, at a certain point that you have all of us, I would say everyone listening to this, we all have zones of expertise, right? And sometimes we don't realize, like, friends of mine, the rare ones that have a 20-plus year marriage and are actually really happy and in love, I'll talk to them. I'm like, hey, you know, you could help people if you ever wanted. Like, you could help people to have better relationships, and they don't really think of it that way. So, like, you know, it's sometimes reminding ourselves, like, what, you know, what our zones of expertise are, and being blessed to have achieved financial freedom, and at this point having helped other people to achieve it, and helping lots of people who are close to achieving it. It's just that's an incredible thing to be able to share. How far off did I get on that one there, Michael?
No, I mean, you said something that made me want to respond right away, because I totally agree with that, because I think part of it is, like, you were saying, like, you know, you're encouraging people to, like, share their relationship experience, right? And I think that's one of the things I actually came to a realization myself is, like, sometimes also with the circle that we're in, we kind of take for granted some of the things that we have. And so we don't think about, like, oh, that doesn't, like, everybody else around me might have the same thing I do. So, like, then, and I feel like it inherently makes us think, like, oh, then I have nothing special to share. Mm-hmm. But when in reality, that's not the case at all. Like, that's one of the things I found really cool about finally getting onto Instagram and social media is you start sharing things like, I'm passionate about wine and whiskey, among other things. And then on occasion, I'll, like, post some things about wine or about whiskey. And some of the response I get is like, oh, I never knew that. Or the funniest one is, I suffer from Asian glow. And one of my cures is downing, like, a Pepcid right before I drink, because it helps me not turn bright like a red balloon or whatever. And, you know, I posted that on Instagram, and I was surprised. Like, people were like, oh, I didn't know about this before. Like, thanks for sharing. And I'm like, wait, you didn't know about this? I thought everybody knew about it. But sometimes it's like the circle that you're in, you kind of limit yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting point, huh?
That's so true.
Yeah, because you really get, because we have experience, we think there's things that we, like, learn. And think of it this way. If you're on the planet for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, inevitably, like, you are good at something. There's things that you've done well. Like, here's a better way. Here's a better way to look. Yeah, like, you don't even have to be, you know, like, I just got things wrong enough, you know.
Something to look forward to. Something to look forward to. In these 49 years, I got to be good for something, damn it. Thanks, Casey. I've been inspired. That's it. I'm dropping. You just dropped the mic right there. I have something of value.
I love it.
No, that's actually, that's good advice. We do take it for granted. Like, what Michael said is true. Like, I joke around a lot, but no, on a serious note, what Michael said is true. And the other thing too is being, like, you know, high achievers and hard workers and everything. You know, I really had to start practicing gratitude a couple years ago. I wasn't practicing gratitude enough. And celebrating the small wins. We're always very hard on ourselves. And I think that in celebrating, you know, those small wins and in practicing gratitude, you start to see some of the things that you've been blessed with that you could probably help bless people in your circle that you care about.
I love it.
And I think it only stands out when you actually pause and reflect. I didn't used to pause and reflect. You've known me long enough to know that I go like 110 miles an hour, right? Like, like my doctor told me last month, hilarious. Like, best way to put it, my doctor's like, you know what? I know you. He's like, you will drive the damn car with the wheels falling off, the tires are shot. You will floor that thing. Like, that was such a great, like, my doctor knows me, right? It was so right on. I was like, that is so true. But while you're doing all that, you're not thinking about, well, I'm actually a good mechanic, or, hey, I did a good job on this paint job. Like, you're too busy, like, driving the damn car that you don't even realize that in the dust, there's these things that you could actually help other people with, you know? So I can totally relate.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, you guys, it's like, just think of it this way. Like, because if you just think, like, what am I good at? Then tend to get caught up, like, on ourselves. But if you think of it this way, like, what have you, there are things in your life, let's just say you're 30 years old or beyond, and I'm just throwing a number out there because every life's different, but let's say you've been around for a few decades, inevitably there are things that you have overcome in your life, whether it's like you had a belly and you got a six pack, or you're struggling in school and then you got through it. But inevitably, there's a long list probably, but things that are very obvious that you overcame. And there are other people on this planet, multiple, who are struggling with exactly what you overcame. And, you know, I had this, I feel like we all do in our own way, but I've had this series of like awakenings. And one of them that I had, it was, it's like just waking up to maybe who you are, right? But one of them was this concept. It was like, and it's not from any place of arrogance, like because I've made many of them self-imposed on myself, mistakes that I made, messes that I made that I had to then clean up, and I got through it and took it to a better place than most people ever get. Like whether it's like my relationship or the amount of real estate sales that I do or my financial freedom, those are things that I have been blessed to get them and sacrifice blood, sweat, and tears to get them to places that very few people get to achieve. But also very few people will achieve the depths of the freaking tragedy or trauma or whatever you want to call it around those things to where I went. A lot of people will stay a lot more kind of in the middle, right? And so yeah, in doing that, you just learn so much about yourself and about the world. And you know, the thing is, you guys, it's like one of the things too that I help people with is, let's just say that you're in a relationship and this applies to anything in life, but in your relationship, like with your partner or whatever, it's like, and they're not behaving the way that you want, or you guys aren't connecting the way that you want, or whatever different millions of forms that can take on. The thing is, what we often do is we try to change our partner, or we try to tell them what we want them to do. We all do this, and this is part of communication, but it's like, hey, I want you to do this, or I don't want you to do that, or whatever. If you're with someone long enough, you'll have these conversations. And so yep. The thing is that, and some of that is necessary, you got to communicate, but you're going to overall, especially with things like, let's say, you know, great example is like you want your partner to work out and they won't. If you are working out consistently enough and you're truly enjoying it enough and they're seeing the changes happen with you, and a bunch of other things I can say around that, like, you know, you joined a gym, you like the gym, and they see you're working out with people at the gym, and like you're dressing a little bit better over time, and you're looking a little bit better over time. Or if you're getting video of yourself, the video is getting better over time, right? At a certain point, just as an example, and there's no guarantees, but a lot of spouses or partners, if you're just legitimately doing that, right? So you're becoming, you're doing this authentically, you're, you know, this is what you're doing, then the attraction, like gravitational force of that, of the chance that you're wife will start getting up early or start going to the gym with you, or by just wanting to, by seeing the glow that you have, by seeing how you feel, by seeing the change. And by the way, like the worse shape that you were in before you started working out, the more that they're going to see this change. So there's always like a hidden advantage, right? Like if you're not in shape, the good thing is if my clients come to me, they're super out of shape. It's like in 90 days or 120 days, if you just stick to this program, and especially if it's like a nutrition and custom workout programs. Like if you stick to this, and it's not complex. If you stick to this, you're going to get ripped. You're going to get jacked. You'll turn heads at the gym. You're going to look different. It's not overnight, but I mean, 3-4 months, anyone can recomposition their body. And if you're not in super good shape, you're going to see more dramatic results typically in that first 3 to 4 months. Some of those dramatic results you're going to see, I mean, we see people lose incredible amount of weight, gain muscle, and just completely look different. So doing that kind of thing, when you change yourself, you can change the fabric of the universe, honestly. But what do people do? It's like you tell your kids, you scold whoever, you know, you tell and you talk and you try whatever. But if you show people by becoming, you know, it's all about becoming the highest version of ourselves, you guys. If you're becoming your highest version of yourself, right? Not like what I tell you that looks like, but for yourself, what is the highest version of yourself? The man that you unbiasedly admire in every possible way. If you focus, this is the counterintuitive nature of life, right? You think it's all about everyone else. So if it's all about everyone else and helping your people, the reality is you focus on building the best version of yourself, and then you just give that individual to the world, and everything else takes care of itself. You don't have to like worry about everyone else's needs right off the bat. Just take care of yourself to a point where like you overflow in giving, you know, for who you are. So.
You probably saw me smirking again, because when you're talking about, I know Shane can relate with the working out stuff, but so can I. Like, I started with Orange Theory like 5-6 years ago. Nice. And yeah, it's the thing. It's like you find something, you get into a habit, you commit yourself something, if you're passionate about, you're true to it, right? It's something you love. I think that energy actually like naturally will come out, right? And since then, like I've gotten my partner to commit and love to Orange Theory. And so now we just work out together. Yeah, it just comes together. And it comes together naturally. Like it's nothing that I ever had to force, but it was just a part of my life. I talked about it religiously because it was important to me. She could see the transformation, right? Like I remember when we first started dating, I had a hard time like giving her a piggyback ride. And then like later on now I'm just like, no problem. Carry you up and down the stairs, whatever, whatever you want.
Look at that. You couldn't give her a piggyback ride? Wow. Story see, Casey talking about really out of shape, dramatic improvements. His girlfriend probably weighs 90 pounds.
This was one of the first times there was also alcohol involved that night. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. We went to a party.
There you go.
Story for another time. I had a very hard time carrying her on my back. Now it's not a problem. But I think it's totally true. And that's one of the things like I also had to learn like with successful relationships is you never want to use the U word. It should never be about, oh, you did this, you did that. It brings up the guard on everybody.
You want another good one?
And you can never get anywhere. Yeah. What's up?
Why? Don't use why questions. So as a coach, I actually violate a lot of rules. Like, you're not supposed to talk about yourself. It's all about them. You're not supposed to use the word why. Because here's different ways you can do it. But Shane, how could we do this way? How do you think we got to this place? What do you think led to that? Like, but I'm not saying why did you do this, right? And the reason is, so with your wife or, you know, anybody, you guys really, just keep it in mind. Because this is something I only learned in recent years. And as soon as I heard it, I was like, wow, that really does have that effect. If I say why about your behavior, if I'm like, why did the Byzantine Empire fall? You guys are, you know, whatever. But if I'm about your behavior and I say why, immediately you're like, you know,
yep,
so.
Yep. Yep.
I got two more. Never and always. Never and always. Never and always.
Ultimatums. Yeah. Gotta be careful with those.
I've been on the bad side of those multiple times in both directions.
Bad side of never and always. Yeah.
Dude.
It's like the bad side of YouTube. You don't want to go there.
Yeah.
That's a whole other episode, Casey. That's a whole other episode.
Seriously, we're definitely gonna do a follow up because I think we're digging up some topics here.
That's so gonna be a man cave follow up.
I think that's gonna be great. Yeah, yeah. I think to wrap up, kind of a couple of questions. One, so for yourself, so Casey Hinchman, the person, like, what are you looking forward to the most this year? Like, what's your vision for yourself as you continue on in your journey?
Really just, pushing through, just breaking barriers in the way that matters to us, as far as like expanding in the ways. You have a book coming out this year, Undeniable. I'm really excited about that. So that's incredible. We've got my coaching business, which officially just launched less than a couple of years ago. That's just taken off with tremendous success, really getting people a lot of results. Just really inspired. You know, when you're doing something for other people, it's like your example around the Orange Theory, Michael, when you were going to the gym, it's like you're doing something that you love and then other people get involved and you're so excited for them. And that kind of concept in life, we can really keep ourselves like learn to live in alignment. Like you're talking about, you mentioned conscious congruent living, which is just really over time getting it so that we don't have to force ourselves. Like I love going to the gym. I love calling my clients. I love being on a podcast talking with you guys like this. So I end up perpetually, like really the majority of my time, there's not somewhere else that I'd rather be or someone else that I'd rather be with at that moment. And so when we can merge as much as possible, right? But when we can merge what we want to do right now with what we want to have done, right? Like what we want now. A lot of times life's a challenge between what we want now, what we want most, but we can actually over time with conscious congruent living, which is just really tuning into like your own heart, your own consciousness, because really like we have this like divine connection, if you will, like to the universe, to God, being able to hear what it is that we really need to do. Like you have answers within you way beyond, there's so much noise, right? So much information, there's so many narratives. You believe things, we all believe things that aren't even really our beliefs, you know? And so helping people just to kind of dissect that a little bit and remember what it is that they really want. Because once you get in touch with what it is you really want, and think about this, you guys, who went to sleep last night? Who went to bed last night? It's like, I want to wake up like more out of shape, like broke and like in a weaker state of mind. No one. So like, I guess you know what you need to do, right? And it's like, we all need to work out every day. We all need to push ourselves in certain ways, you know, that matter to us. So yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, no, I know, like, we could totally keep going, but we got to get to kind of our wrap-up question. We're definitely going to have to do a part two. Well, hey, sorry, if Mr. Michael here approves.
I'm short on my next answers, I guess.
Oh, no. This is the magic. This is the magic final answer, but I think Michael's going to agree with me that we're going to do a part two. But to wrap up part one. You know, we got so much to... Yeah, we have so much to dive into. Like, the three of us can really, there's a lot of things that the three of us have in alignment that we could really grow. So Casey, you happen to be in the industry, but we have a lot of guests that are not necessarily in real estate. And, you know, when we wrap up our podcast, kind of like everybody's podcast has their own theme or what they do. And for us, we always like to ask a question, you know, at the end. And this will be easy for you, obviously, both because you're a coach and you're in real estate. But, you know, with your experience and obviously where you're at in life, if you were going to start off today as a brand new real estate agent, what are like a couple just quick tips that you would give? Like, how would you go about starting your real estate business today?
Awesome. Well, having a good coach, a good mentor, someone that has the results, that's number one, who can set you up right from the beginning, because that's what has saved me a lot of time. I help to save people a lot of time. So that is fantastic, whether it's at your brokerage or a coach. And the other one, really, really simple, but basics. You know, you gotta learn the business, but you really have to focus on, and this goes for all professions, anyone who's self-employed in sales, you really have to focus on generating business, generating client business, and set aside time. You know, clients that are attorneys, all sorts of, just across different industries. And even with, you know, especially when they're very, very busy, all of them, they learn to set aside time every day, as you know, Shane, to generate new business and cultivate that new business. So that's just huge. You know, start with setting a buyer or seller appointment every single day, because as you know, any agent, if you did that consistently, had a basic follow-up program, you'd absolutely kill it, right? So that's a great mentor, you know, go to a good company and start and definitely focus on lead generation, you know, getting that going. I think those are a couple of really key ones. And love it, you know, take it day by day. Just love the process. Everything in this life, you got to love the journey.
Well, just it's funny you mentioned coach and now you're a coach. It's, you know, that's one thing I love about you is that you practice what you preach and you don't go and recommend to people, because that's the problem, is that there's a lot of coaches out there that are not still in production, not in the business. Like when Michael, in fact, Michael was, I'll let Michael speak for himself, but one of the things he liked about starting this podcast was that we're actually actively producing and, you know, successful people in the industry that we're, you know, saying, here, do as we do. We're not collecting monthly fees and just like, you know, we haven't been in production for years or maybe never did at a high level. And so like your answer was like, you know, what I would expect, because you're the real deal. So, you know, thanks for your time. Thanks for being here. And we're definitely going to do a part two.
And last but not least, asking for a friend, and anybody else who might be interested in coaching or kind of connecting with you more, what's the best way for folks to do that?
So Instagram, it's Hinchman Casey with a K, Hinchman Casey. Yep. And then I've also got my website, which is caseyhinchman.com. So real easy to find. Plus I'm a real estate agent. Casey Hinchman's easy to find. So
easy to find.
I'd love to help you. Group one-on-one coaching. Happy to help with whatever you got going on. I love talking with you guys. Thank you so much for having me, and to be continued, huh?
To be continued, yes, Casey. Sir. Thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Shane.
All right. Yeah, we'll see you guys on the next episode of the Top Producing Zone podcast. Thanks for tuning in.